right now, somewhere in the world, a single person with $50 and, like, a long weekend is actively out-competing a fully funded 30-person engineering team.
Which is just wild to think about.
It's completely wild. And welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are looking at a fundamental rewiring of how tech companies are actually born. This is all driven by a massive 2026 article from Teakingame, Game, and it's called The 72-Hour Solopreneur, Building AI Startups Alone.
Yeah, that article really shook things up.
It really did. So our mission today is to figure out exactly how a single founder uses this highly specialized team of AI agents to go from, you know, a napkin sketch to a market-ready MVP in less than 3 days.
Right, under 72 hours.
Exactly. So if you've ever dreamt of launching your own product or you're just trying to comprehend the sheer scale of this shift in the future of work, This is the blueprint. Okay, let's unpack this. We start with the promise of the solopreneur, but the irony here is you aren't actually doing this alone.
No, not at all. You still need a team. It's just, well, it's not a human one.
Right.
The modern solopreneur functions much more like an architect than a traditional programmer. You're delegating the execution. But to build a scalable ecosystem, you can't just hand your whole product roadmap to, like, a general-purpose chatbot.
Which people try to do all the time.
All the time. And the data shows that relying on a single instance of an early model to handle product management, copywriting, back-end engineering, it inevitably leads to system collapse. You have to structure virtual departments.
Which makes sense on a human level, right? I mean, you wouldn't hire a brilliant graphic designer and then ask them to optimize your database.
Exactly. It'd be a disaster.
But let me push back for a second. Why do we need these specific isolated AI models? Like, what is physically preventing a single highly advanced model from just doing it all?
Well, what's fascinating here is that a general chatbot simply cannot maintain the architectural vision of a massive multi-layered project. It loses the thread.
Like it forgets what it's doing.
Basically, yeah. As a project grows, the context window, which is the model short-term memory, it just gets flooded. That's why creating a specific AI C-suite is so critical. For instance, for your product manager and analyst role, you deploy Gemini 1.5 Pro.
Okay. Why Gemini for that?
Because the architecture of that specific model is highly optimized for multimodal capabilities. It parses massive complex data sets. It acts as the brain of the product strategy because it can ingest raw market data and, you know, spit out actionable insights with lightning speed.
Right. So Gemini acts as the strategist.
Right.
Then you bring in Claude 3 Opus for the content creator and copywriting roles. But wait, why not just use Gemini for the text as well?
It really comes down to how the neural networks are tuned. Claude 3 Opus has a training architecture heavily weighted toward high-level linguistic reasoning and nuanced tone.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it understands cadence and empathy much better than models that are tuned purely for data crunching. But the actual linchpin of this entire operation, your chief technology officer, is the Llama Minimax M3 Cloud model.
The CTO. And this is where the underlying tech gets kind of wild. Because the claim is that the Minimax M3 model has a 1 million token context window.
Yeah.
And it utilizes something called MSA, or Minimax Sparse Attention. Can you explain how that actually works under the hood?
Sure, yeah. So with older models, calculating the relationship between every single word or piece of code against every other piece of code requires an exponential amount of computational power.
Right.
So if the code base gets too large, the system just hits a wall. It literally forgets how your database is structured by the time it starts writing the user interface.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But Sparse Attention changes that. Instead of looking at everything all at once, the AI learns to dynamically focus only on the most relevant clusters of information, which drastically reduces the memory load.
So it's like instead of a chef trying to cook a massive 10-course banquet in a tiny kitchen, where they eventually forget about the appetizer because they're so focused on the dessert, Sparse Attention gives the chef a massive, organized kitchen where they can instantly locate every single ingredient without getting overwhelmed.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it. And for emerging markets fighting heavy inflation, where hiring a senior developer is just financially impossible, this mechanism is revolutionary. You connect the AI directly to your file system, and because of that massive context window, it holds the entire application architecture in its memory simultaneously.
Which is incredible. But once you have this team assembled, you've got Gemini strategizing, Claude communicating, and Minimax coding, the immediate bottleneck is knowing exactly what to build.
Exactly.
How do you go from this theoretical C-suite to a deployed product in 72 hours without the whole thing just turning into chaos?
Well, the execution phase requires intense discipline. The first 24 hours involve absolutely zero coding.
Really, like, No coding on day one.
None. You use Gemini to analyze the market problem and draft a comprehensive PRD. A detailed product requirements document acts as the guardrails for the AI, because if you give an AI a vague directive, it will confidently hallucinate a solution you do not want.
Oh, for sure. So you hand that PRD over to Claude, and Claude starts generating the text wireframes and mapping out the database relationships. You're basically building the skeleton.
Exactly. And once that skeleton is approved, you enter the second 24 hours, which is the heavy coding and database connection phase.
Day two.
Right. You take the architecture you just planned and feed it to Minimax M3. Because of that million token context window, you can prompt it to generate the complete front-end and back-end logic in a continuous flow rather than, you know, breaking it into hundreds of disjointed prompts.
Which brings us to the third day, debugging and deployment. There's this anecdote in the research from a developer named Majid, and it highlights a workflow that feels almost like cheating.
Oh, yeah, the error log thing.
Yeah. When he encounters a bug, he isn't manually hunting through thousands of lines of code. He simply copies the terminal error logs, drops them into the AI's chat window, and tells it to fix the issue. But wait, is it really that passive? Doesn't the human still need a baseline understanding of what they're looking at?
Relying purely on copy-pasting error logs is a trap. You absolutely must possess a basic understanding of algorithmic logic. The human in this loop is not a blank slate. They are the essential filter.
Right.
Consider a scenario where the AI writes a pricing function. If it accidentally calculates a 10% discount instead of a 20% discount, the code will compile perfectly. The server won't crash.
Oh, so there is no terminal error log to copy and paste.
Exactly. Because the code is mathematically sound, it's just logically wrong based on the business rules. You have to be able to read the logic the AI generates and diagnose those invisible errors. You are directing the process, ensuring the outputs actually align with reality.
Okay, so the human is the director, catching the logic gaps. But building the code is only half the battle. Historically, hosting and managing the infrastructure, like the databases, the servers, that is a massive soul-crushing bottleneck.
It really is.
But here's where it gets really interesting, because the AI is completely revolutionizing the back-end layer, too.
Oh, absolutely. The shift in back-end architecture is arguably more impactful than the front-end generation. We are moving entirely away from complex traditional server setups like, you know, running an Express.js application on a raw Linux virtual private server.
Which used to mean you had to be a system administrator.
Mm-hmm.
You had to buy your plot of digital land, pour the concrete, build the pipes, patch the operating system, and manually scale the servers if you got a spike in traffic.
It was exhausting.
Now, solopreneurs are utilizing the golden backend strategy, serverless and edge computing.
Right, and serverless fundamentally changes the economics of a startup. By combining Next.js root handlers with cloud databases like Supabase or Neon, which operate on serverless Postgres, you aren't paying for idle servers. It scales up when a user clicks a button and scales down to zero when they leave.
That's huge.
And Minimax M3 can generate your full API route codes, the commands, to get, post, put, and delete data in a single generation that interfaces perfectly with these serverless environments.
And the research is incredibly strict about authentication. It explicitly says, never let the AI write an auth system from scratch.
Oh, never.
You integrate Supabase Auth or a clerk and delegate the setup to the AI. But what really stood out to me was how AI handles the DevOps side, managing the deployments.
Mm.
I mean, I've always found Docker and server configurations incredibly intimidating. How does a solopreneur handle that without a dedicated engineer?
Well, it's through the use of terminal agents. The barrier of memorizing obscure Linux commands is completely gone. You can provide a plain English prompt instructing the agent to, say, package the project into a Docker container, configure the database connections, and deploy it to a specific domain.
But Docker containers can get bloated really fast if you don't know what you're doing, right?
Mm.
How does the AI avoid just building a massive, slow application image?
Because the models are trained to write automated, multi-stage Docker files.
Okay, how does that work?
During the build process, the AI creates a heavy environment with all the necessary tools to compile the code. But once the code is compiled, the multi-stage script copies only that lightweight, finished executable into a brand new tiny container for deployment.
Wow.
Yeah, it strips out all the underlying bloat automatically, which drastically reduces your server memory footprint.
And when you pair that with modern platform as a service providers like Vercel or Render, the AI writes the configuration files, and the entire deployment is triggered by a single git push command. It's like AI isn't just designing the house, it's doing the plumbing and the electrical work while you sleep.
That's exactly it.
And the automation brings the overhead down to numbers that are almost hard to believe. They break it down to $20 for Vercel Pro hosting, $25 for Supabase Pro, and roughly $5 in API calls to the AI agents. That is $50 a month, completely replacing a DevOps and back-end engineering salary.
The financial efficiency is definitely unprecedented. However, moving at this velocity, relying this heavily on automation, it introduces severe vulnerabilities. This raises an important question about how founders stay in control, because we really have to examine the concept of the illusion of security.
The Ferrari trap. The idea that building a product with AI is like driving a hypercar. If you don't understand the mechanics of the grip and just mash the accelerator, you are going to spin out at the first corner. Because, I mean, if you can build a startup in 72 hours, you can build a massive security breach in 72 hours.
And those breaches usually stem from blindly trusting generated code. Let's look at SQL injection, which is a classic vulnerability. If a user types malicious database commands into your website's login bar, a poorly written backend might just execute those commands and delete your data.
Yikes.
Yeah. So to prevent this, you have to explicitly prompt the AI to use an ORM, an object relational mapper.
Because an ORM acts like a translator. It takes whatever the user types, sanitizes it, and turns it into safe, predictable objects before it ever touches the actual database.
Right. It neutralizes the threat. But another critical risk is flawed authentication logic. An AI might successfully build a data endpoint, but entirely forget to implement role-based access control.
So what happens then?
Well, without it, any standard user who figures out the URL structure might have the power to delete administrative data simply because the AI didn't restrict the permission layer.
Man, that's dangerous. I also read about environment variable leaks, and frankly, that one sounds terrifying. How does an AI accidentally expose your secret API keys to the public?
It happens through model hallucination. When an AI is generating client-side front-end code, the code that gets sent directly to the user's browser, it might hallucinate and hard-code your private server-side API keys directly into that bundle.
Oh, no.
Suddenly, anyone who inspects your website's source code has the keys to your database.
So if the AI is prone to these kinds of blind spots, how does a solo founder actually secure the product without spending another month doing manual code reviews?
The methodology researchers suggest is to open a completely separate, isolated chat context dedicated exclusively to security. You take the code that Minimax generated, hand it to Claude, and prompt it to act as a white hat hacker. You specifically instruct it to review the code base against the OWASP Top 10, which is the industry standard list of the most critical web application vulnerabilities.
So you are basically forcing one AI to red team the other AI's work.
Precisely.
But there are still behavioral traps that founders fall into, right? Things that break the system before security even becomes an issue.
Oh, absolutely. The most fatal trap is attempting to force the AI to generate the entire application in a single massive file, or trying to change your underlying tech stack midway through development. You have to maintain modular architecture.
So breaking it down.
Yeah, you break the build down into hyper-specific microtasks, and you define exact personas for every prompt. Treat the agents as modular workers, not magic wands.
It requires extreme managerial discipline. But realistically, with claims like a 1 million token context window, there is naturally a lot of skepticism. Claims from AI companies are notoriously optimistic. How do we know the Minimax M3 model can actually parse massive code bases without just dropping information?
That's a fair question. We look at the independent benchmarks, specifically the NIAH benchmark, which stands for Needle in a Haystack. Independent researchers ran tests fully traceable on Hugging Face repositories and found that for context windows over 500,000 tokens, the Minimax M3 model maintained a 99.2% information retrieval rate.
Okay, let's visualize what that actually looks like in a testing environment.
Sure. Researchers took the raw Linux source code and fed 50,000 lines of it directly into the model. Somewhere in the middle of that dense block of text, say, hidden perfectly at line 25,000, they injected a single obscure variable.
The needle.
The needle, exactly. They then instructed the AI to locate that specific anomaly. And 99.2% of the time, the model pinpointed that exact line within the 50,000 lines of code.
That is the level of empirical verification you need when you're trusting an architecture to run your entire backend.
Definitely.
And it's worth noting the transparency here. The researchers clarify that this data isn't sponsored by Vercel or Supabase, and they add a very necessary reality check. The 72-hour timeline is an average prediction for an MVP of medium complexity.
Right. If you're trying to build a highly regulated enterprise system, the multi-layered architecture will demand significantly more time.
So what does this all mean? When you strip away the benchmarks and the cost savings, what is the ultimate takeaway for you, the listener?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it fundamentally redefines the identity of the software founder. The critical skill is no longer your ability to write syntax quickly. You are an orchestra conductor.
I love that analogy.
Your primary function is to maintain harmony between Gemini's strategic planning, Claude's communication, and Minimax's technical execution.
You are standing at the podium, ensuring the brass section and the strings are reading the exact same sheet music. We've explored an incredible blueprint today, from brainstorming and wireframing with Gemini and Claude to generating a serverless backend and full frontend with Minimax M3, all the way to using terminal agents for automated deployments.
It's a whole new world.
It really is a masterclass in treating AI not as a search engine, but as an operational C-suite. But it leaves us with something really profound to think about. If the barrier to building complex software has dropped to just 72 hours and $50, we have to wonder, when everyone has the power to build a tech startup almost instantly, does the code itself lose its value? In a world where execution is nearly free, will your unique ideas and your deep empathy for the user's actual problem become the only true currency left? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep learning, and we'll see you next time.